Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm super excited and super glad that you're watching from wherever you are today. I'll be taking us on a journey these next 3 weeks, exploring a theme in Scripture about the need to slow down in life. And I'm super excited, and I hope you are as well. I just want to say a big thank you to Tom from church. He shared an excellent message last week about using what God has put in your hands. And if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to go back to our YouTube channel and check it out. It was an excellent sermon. But today I'm going to be exploring an invitation Jesus gives us in Matthew chapter 11, and I'm super excited. But before we get there, I want to ask you guys a question. Do you guys remember this TV show? And hopefully it pops up on your screen. You know, it was one of the kids' TV shows I watched growing up, and it was super fun. Did you watch it? You know, if not, what was your favorite TV show growing up? You can put it in the comment section. I'd love to see some of your responses. But anyway, this TV show, if anyone can remember, was called The Jetsons. And I remember watching it as a kid, and it gave us a picture of what life could look like in the future. See, it was made in 1962, and it was set 100 years in the future, in the year 2062. And the Jetsons lived in this place called Orbit City. And though it's, you know, far-fetched, and some of the ideas in there are pretty crazy, some of the ideas of what might happen in the future have actually come true already. See, for example, they had a house cleaning robot. And although we don't have the house robot like that can talk and interact with us, we do have robots that can actually clean our house. They had tanning beds. They had touchscreen devices, which is a reality now. They had video calling, which is a big part of our lives in this day and age. And so some of the things they predicted in there have actually come to pass. Some of the stuff, such as flying cars and moving sidewalks in the city, have not come true. But I think one of the craziest realities, one of the craziest predictions they made in that TV show, is the amount of hours humans will be working in the future. They said that, I was looking at it, that citizens in Orbit City only worked 9 hours a week. 9 hours a week, how crazy is that? Some of us work 9 hours a day, if not more. And I quote, this is a scene from the show. "Yesterday, I worked 2 full hours, George complains to his wife. His wife is appalled. Well, what does Spacely think he's running? A sweatshop? See, George Jetson was complaining about the reality of working 2 whole hours. And it seems like such a far-fetched idea. But the thinking of the day wasn't that far off. See, in an article I was reading, in the 1960s, futurists all over the world, from sci-fi writers to political theorists, thought that by now we'd be working way fewer hours. One famous Senate subcommittee in 1967 was told that by 1985, the average American would only work 22 hours a week for a total of 27 hours. Weeks a year. See, everybody thought the problem in the future would be too much leisure time, too much free time. See, the thought was that with all these labor-saving devices, you know, such as the dishwasher, the washing machine, computers, emails, we would have more free time to spend. And the problem was going to be, how are we going to fill all that time? Yet, you look at the world around us, and the reality is far different from that. In fact, we've gone the opposite way. We're working more than ever. You know, on average, we are working 4 more hours per year than they did in 1979. A study conducted at the Harvard Business School has shown that thanks to modern technology, managers and professionals in Europe, Asia, and North America now spend 80 to 90 hours per week either working or monitoring work and remaining accessible. And according to a Korean study, the smartphone has the average employee working 11 more hours per week. So these labor-saving devices have actually created more work for us, in a sense. We're filling up our time with more work, with more responsibilities, and we're busy running around, filling up our lives with all these responsibilities and all these activities. We are more busy than ever. See, just have a conversation with someone And how often do we hear the phrase, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good, or I'm great, I'm just busy. Everyone seems to respond with, hey, I'm blank, but I'm busy. We all seem to be very busy, and you'll find this answer everywhere if you pay attention. From stay-at-home mums to CEOs, from college students to PhD lecturers, everyone seems to be busy. And don't get me wrong, busyness can be a good thing. It's nice to be productive, it's nice to have a fulfilling life and be doing stuff. The problem becomes when you have too much to do, and the only way to keep up is to cram more in. And you know, we all wish to have more time. If I had just had 10 hours extra per day, but how would we fill that time? We would probably fill it with more stuff. And I came across this quote. Kerry Ten Boom said, if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. If the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because in reality, some of my worst moments are when I'm busy, or when I'm in a hurry, when I'm in a rush. It's those moments where I'm least like Jesus. I lose my temper, I lose my cool, I'm not who I should be. If the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. See, hurry and love, they're incompatible. You know, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians that love is patient, love is kind, not that love is busy and love is in a hurry. Or you read through scriptures and you see the characters in there that they didn't run with God, they walked with God. See, following God is a pace that's different to our life. You know, I was reading about a pastor over in North America. His name's John Ortberg, and he was associated with Willow Creek Church. And this was before he became big, and you know, he was being given more and more responsibilities. He was going to look after this church, which was having multiple services, and it was just growing at an insane rate. And you know, it was crushing him. And he didn't know what to do, so he called up his mentor. And his mentor was this guy called Dallas Willard, who was an amazing theologian and writer. And he was a spiritual mentor to John. And John writes, hey, like, you know, he called him up and said, Dallas, I can't do it. Like, it's crushing me. How do I become the me I want to be? How do I look after this? How do I look after these responsibilities? How do I keep myself sane during this time? And they're on the phone, and there's a long, awkward pause as Dallas was thinking and reflecting. And he responded with this. He said, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. And John thought, hey, that's great. And he wrote that down on a piece of paper. And he asked, is there anything else? And Dallas, he paused, and there was a bit more awkward silence. And he said, there is nothing else. Hurry is the greatest enemy of spiritual life in our day. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. And I know it's such a crazy thought, but it's a profound thought as well that I think we need to take and put action into, that we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our life. Hurry is distracting us. Hurry is causing us to stray away from God. It takes away, it eats at us. It's an obstacle that we need to overcome. See, busyness and being in a hurry is an epidemic that is plaguing all of us, especially Christians. And as Christians, we're called to counter culture. We're called to be different to the reality around us. God gives us a different way to operate, yet we seem to be like everyone else. And see, there was a study done by, I believe, Charlton University over in America. And they did a study amongst university students on obstacles to growth amongst Christians. And they found this. It may be the case that, one, Christians are assimilating to a culture of busyness, hurry and overload, which leads to, two, God becoming more marginalized in Christians' lives, which leads to, three, a deteriorating relationship with God, which leads to, four, Christians becoming even more vulnerable to adopting secular assumptions about how to live, which leads to, five, more conformity to a culture of busyness, hurry and overload. And see, what we see from this study is that it's a never-ending cycle. Busyness, hurry, leads us away from God, and being led away from God leads us to more busyness, more hurriedness. And we can't seem to get a grasp of what's going on. All of us seem to be short of time. Time is the problem that each and every one of us face. How do we make the most of our time? See, people are just too busy to live emotionally healthy, spiritually rich, and vibrant lives. We're just too distracted. We're just too busy. We are just too much in a hurry. Socrates famously said many, many, many years ago that the unexamined life is not worth living. The unexamined life is not worth living. Yet, if we're honest enough, a lot of us don't have time to reflect. And when we do, we don't want to reflect. We don't want to slow down. We don't want to get silent. See, to get to the point where we're reflecting and where we're thinking means that we have to get quiet, that we have to get still, that we have to pause and reflect to think and ponder. But we're too busy filling our life. We're too busy with too much distraction and too much noise and too much stuff going on in the background. And I know for me, like, I don't like getting quiet. I don't like being still and silent and pausing. I constantly need to have something going on in the background. I need to have white noise, you know, whether it be, you know, Netflix playing in the background, whether it be a podcast playing as I do other work. I don't like being silent and still. But I think we need to take that time to honestly get quiet with God. Yet I think one of the biggest distractions, one of the biggest things stopping us from getting silent and still and quiet and slowing down and pausing is actually the smartphone or the iPhone or whatever phone device that you have. I think this is one of the biggest distractions in our lives today. See, 2007 will be known as the year that the digital revolution came about, because it was the year that the first iPhone was released. And since then, the world has been radically changed and shaped by the smartphone and access to the internet. Essentially, the phone acts as a portal to the internet. Everyone has access to the internet. It's in the back of our pockets. You know, we live in a world where to be without a smartphone seems incomprehensible. To walk into a room without Wi-Fi is unheard of. And not having a social media account seems barbaric. We live in a digital world, and the smartphone has radically shifted the way that we operate. And as I was doing my research, I came across this alarming fact about the use of phones. And this study found that the average iPhone user touches his or her phone a whopping 2,617 times a day. Each user is on his or her phone for 2.5 hours over 76 sessions throughout the day. And this is a study for all smartphone users. Another study focusing just on millennials puts the number at double that. In every study, most people had no clue about how much time they actually lost to their phones. One study actually states, if you grow dependent on your phone, it becomes a magical device that silently shouts your name at your brain all the time. And that really hit me, because I don't know about you, but I always, for some reason, I have that urge, that compulsion to just check my phone. I can be doing something. You know, I can be reading, or I can be doing some study. And I just have this urge, like, check your phone. And it's just like whispering at me, hey, check it. For no reason in particular. I can be in a group of people, and this urge, this compulsion just comes to check my phone. And I check it and nothing's even there, but I feel satisfied after doing it. Or, I can put down my phone, I can put it in my pocket, and I happen to feel a buzz. I happen to feel a notification, and I get really excited, and I check my phone, and it actually turns out to be nothing. There's no notification, there's no message there, but I swear I felt the buzz. I swear I heard the noise. But there's actually a name for this. It's called the phantom vibration syndrome. See, apparently some of us are so concerned about missing a call or a text that we've become extra aware of the sensations that mean one is incoming. And so our brain sort of fakes it. You know, there's a great documentary out on Netflix at the moment. It's slightly scary, but well worth watching because it raises awareness around social media. It's called The Social Dilemma. Or there's a great book that outlines this as well. It's called Digital Minimalism. And it actually unpacks and outlines more about what social media and what digital technology is actually doing to us. And it's changing us, and not necessarily for the better. In both those accounts, both in Digital Minimalism and The Social Dilemma, there's this guy by the name of Tristan Harris. He was a Silicon Valley giant. He worked for all the big companies, helped develop the software behind social media. And he grew disenfranchised with what they were doing, and he has since started a non-profit that focuses on raising awareness around the issues with digital media. And he advocates for a better approach. See, he says they are designed for distraction and they are designed for addiction. He essentially calls them, they are slot machines in our pocket. And see, slot machines, they don't take much money, yet they generate a lot of revenue because people become addicted to it. And although it takes quarters, but if you keep putting quarters in there, it adds up over time. And it's the same with social media, he says. You know, 5 minutes on Facebook here, 10 minutes on Instagram scrolling throughout the day, it adds up. And before you know it, you've spent 2-3 hours on your phone. He says the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? A little dopamine hit here when you get a like, a little dopamine hit there when you refresh. They are designed to keep you there. And see, I don't know about you, but I have a problem with my phone. And reading this book and seeing that documentary, you know, raised awareness to me. And you know, I'm not against social media, I'm not against any of this stuff, but I think we need to be more aware of what's going on. And I think we've too easily just looked at all the pros without assessing some of the cons. And you know, I went and checked on the iPhone, there's an app that allows you to check how much time you're actually spending on your phone. And when COVID first hit, man, I was shocked at the amount of time I was spending on my phone. It was at one point up to 7 hours a day. And I was, wow, how can I do that? And I've had conversations with friends and, you know, just been honest about it. And there was actually one time my friend said that they came over to my house to come see me. And I was there sitting on my couch, just on my phone. And my friend stood at the doorway for like a solid 10 minutes, they said. And I didn't look up once. I wasn't even aware they were there. And they just left because I was so consumed with my phone. But I can't put it down at times. It seems to be an addiction. I think a lot of us, if we're honest, if we honestly reflect here, a lot of us are addicted to our phones. And Tony Schwartz, he defined addiction as this. Addiction is the relentless pull to a substance or an activity that becomes so compulsive, it ultimately interferes with everyday life. By that definition, nearly everyone I know is addicted in some measures to the internet. So maybe you're not addicted to your phone. Maybe you're not, and that is awesome. But maybe you are, or you're not sure. If you want to know, hey, put your phone down for 24 hours straight and see if you get an urge. See if you get the nagging feeling to just check it, to just open Facebook, just open Instagram, to just scroll Reddit. You know, I think we need to think more about the pros and cons, about the impact it's having in our lives. I think we've embraced it too quickly without assessing the overall impact it's having on us. And it's having a massive impact. You know, since 2000, our attention span has actually reduced. I mean, it wasn't great to start with. In 2000, the average person had an attention span of 12 seconds. It has since then dropped down to 8 seconds. To put that in perspective, goldfish have a higher attention span than most humans at the moment. And this distraction carries on into our spiritual lives, into our journey, and into our walk with God. And I unpack all of this because it's impacting us emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Ronald Rollheiser had this to say. He says, "We are distracting ourselves into spiritual oblivion. We are more busy than bad, more distracted than non-spiritual, more interested in the movie theater, sports stadium, and the shopping mall, and the fantasy life they produce in us than we are the church. What a sobering thought. I love how he says it there. We are distracting ourselves into spiritual oblivion. And it's not that, you know, we don't want to spend time with God. It's not that we don't want to do any of those things. It's just that we're too distracted, that we don't make the time or the conscious effort to actually do it. John Ortberg had to say this, that for many of us, the great danger is not that we will renounce our faith. It is that we will become so distracted and rushed and preoccupied that we will settle for a mediocre version of it. We will just skim our lives instead of actually living them. You know, distraction, busyness, and hurry, it's impacting us in so many different ways. You know, I think the smartphone, the iPhone, could be considered a greater threat to our connection with God than secularism or an atheist worldview. See, I'm far more likely to be distracted by a Facebook alert or an Instagram message while trying to pray or while reading the Bible or while, you know, trying to practice some time with God than I am from someone who's secular or someone who's atheist or someone who's far from God. I'm far more likely to distract myself. So yeah, we're busy, we're distracted, and we always seem to be in a hurry, one thing to the next, one thing to the next. I'm just in a hurry. I just got to do this thing. I just got to do that thing. You know, psychologists and mental health professionals are now talking about an epidemic of the modern world, and they title it hurry sickness. Hurry sickness. And I just have two definitions here. It's a behavior pattern characterized by continual rushing and anxiousness. Or it's a malaise or malaise in which a person feels chronically short of time and so tends to perform every task faster and get flustered when encountering any kind of delay. Sorry, I had some typos in that definition there. Yeah, we tend to perform every task faster and get flustered when we encounter delay. No. Have you ever found yourself experience hurry sickness? Maybe you're not sure. Well, here's some signs of hurry sickness that health professionals and psychologists mention. They say if you move from one checkout line to the other because it looks shorter or faster, it's hurry sickness. If you find yourself in traffic at the red lights counting cars in the other lane and switching because there are less cars or because it's moving faster, hurry sickness. Or you multitask to the point where you actually forget a task. Are you irritable? Do you get mad or frustrated or annoyed way too easily that the little things irk you? Or restlessness, when you actually try to slow down and rest and you can't relax. You read scripture, but you find it boring. You have quiet time with God, but you can't focus your mind. Or workaholism. You know, you just don't know when to stop. Or worse yet, you can't stop. Another hour, another day, another week, just 5 more minutes doing this little thing at work. You know, your drug of choice are accomplishment and accumulation, leading you prey to sunset fatigue, where by the end of the day you have nothing left to give to your spouse, kids, or loved ones. Or isolation. You feel disconnected from God and others and your own soul. On those rare times when you actually stop to pray, you're so stressed and distracted that your mind can't set to actually enjoy God's company. These are just a few different things of how hurried sickness might be impacting us. And there's more to it. And you can look it up on Google, just internet hurry sickness. But the reality is, in one way or another, we are all impacted by busyness, by hurry, by distractedness from social media and our smartphone usage. And if you're not impacted by any of this, please message me. I'd love to know your secret. Love to know how you combat this. But the point I'm driving is this, that an overbusy, hurried life of speed is the new normal in the Western world, and it's toxic. Yet as Christians, we succumb to it. We're no better. We find ourselves falling into the same trap. Yet Jesus offers us an alternative. Jesus offers us a different way to live life. Do we see it? Do we embrace it? Do we read it in Scripture? You know, I think we're just like everyone else. You know, hurry kills all that we hold dear. It kills our spiritual health, our marriage, our families, our thoughtful work, our creativity. Name your value. Hurry is a sociopathic predator loose in our society. Man, what a crazy thought. Hurry is a sociopathic predator loose in our society. Hurry, busyness, distraction, it's impacting us physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. You know, so many of us want to be connected with God. We want to grow in our relationship with God. We want to go deeper in and understand and know Him more. But so many of us live without a sense of God's presence throughout the day. We talk about it as if God is the one who's absent. God's left me. God's far. God's just not in my life. But it could it be that it is us who are absent, not God? We sit around sucked into our phones or TV or to-do list, oblivious to the God who is around us, with us and in us. See, you become what you give your attention to. What you fill your mind with will shape the trajectory of your character. What are you focusing on? Where's your attention at? What are you spending time doing? That's why Jesus famously said in the Sermon on the Mount, where your heart lies, so your treasure will also. What are you giving your attention to? What's taking your priority? What's taking your time? Hurry is not just a disordered schedule, it's a disordered heart. Where do your priorities lie? What are you giving your attention to? And so, sorry, I've spent the last however long, 15, 20 minutes, outlining this crazy problem that seems to be plaguing us. What's the solution? And I'll give you a hint, it's not more time, it's not more hours in the day, because we'd fill it with more stuff and more busyness and more hurriedness. It's about slowing down and simplifying our lives around what really matters. It's about orientating our life around the way of Jesus. See, when you read the gospel accounts, when you read the stories of Jesus, immerse yourself in that world, because Jesus was never in a hurry. He was never in a rush. I just picture Jesus as this super calm, non-anxious presence who just walks about freely and slowly. I don't imagine him jogging. I don't imagine him in a run. But I imagine all the other people yelling and screaming and urging Jesus to come quickly. And I just picture Jesus responding calmly in a Zen-like manner. You know, when called for to come right now, Jesus would often go and do something else and come later. There's a lot that we can learn from Jesus. And these next few weeks, I just want to spend some time observing and looking at how Jesus lived life and what we can learn from him. You know, Jesus was a rabbi, which means teacher. And I think there's a lot that we miss. We forget and we neglect that Jesus was a rabbi. You know, yes, he is Messiah, he is Savior, and he is Lord. He is the full embodiment of God himself, and these things are all important, and we preach it all the time. But I think we also need to observe that Jesus was a rabbi, and we need to understand what that means as well. And see, there are two things as a rabbi. First, a rabbi, and Jesus wasn't the only rabbi. There was lots of rabbis in his day and age. And rabbis had what was called a yoke. And if you're not sure, this is what a yoke is. And it was used to tie two animals together so that they could share the load, that they could carry the load and do farming a whole lot better. But a yoke was a common idiom in Jesus' days, meaning it's an imagery saying. They used this idea of yoke as a way of saying it was a rabbi's way of teaching the Torah. How a rabbi taught was his yoke. It was his set of teachings on how to be human. His way to shed the at times crippling weight of life, marriage, prayer, money, sex, conflict resolution, government, all of that. A rabbi's yoke was how you would shoulder the load. It's how you would live life. You would take up a rabbi's yoke. What made Jesus unique as a rabbi is that he said his yoke was easy. Most rabbis, most people found it to be crippling and to be weight-bearing. Their yoke wasn't easily. So that's the first thing about rabbis. The second thing, rabbis would have disciples. And we read that Jesus had disciples, but it was common in that day and age that all rabbis would have disciples. And we talk about disciple and discipleship a lot. Sometimes I think that we miss that language. We don't fully understand what it means. A number of scholars agree that a great way to translate disciple is actually apprentice. It's apprenticeship to Jesus. It's apprenticeship to your rabbi. And see, apprenticeship isn't so much about the theoretical knowledge. It's about living it out. It's about learning and observing in action. And as a disciple following your rabbi, you had three goals. It was to, and these are our same goals today with following Jesus. Our goals are to be with Jesus, to be like Jesus, and to do what Jesus would do. And so I think the call for us is to model our life, to observe Jesus closely, and to live out the life that he promises to us. It's to model our life after his. And in doing so, we find healing and we find salvation. And you know that word, healing and salvation, they're the same in the Greek. So when you read stories and you read that someone was healed, or you read someone and they were saved, it's the same word. It's this word sozo, or soteria. Saving is healing. And this is what Jesus was all about, healing and saving people at a soul deep level. And Jesus would constantly offer up these invitations to find saving and to find healing in him. And I love the invitations that we can find in the gospel accounts. And one of my favorite invitations comes from Matthew chapter 11. And Mehdi read it to us earlier, and it's a beautiful invitation that Jesus gives us. And I'm just going to read it. I've got two translations here. I love both. And I'm going to read from the NIV here, and I'm going to read from the Message. And I just want us to just soak in these words. Look at the invitation that Jesus offers us here. And so this is what we read. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Or again, we read in the Message, are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burnt out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to walk. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and you'll learn to live lightly. Man, those are some beautiful words, and I think they've been some of my favorite lately. This is such a beautiful invitation from Jesus. You know, do you feel weary? Do you feel tired? Are you burdened? Does anybody feel a bone-deep tiredness? Not just in your mind or your body, but deep within your soul. Do you feel exhausted? If so, you're not alone. Jesus invites all of us to take up the easy yoke, to follow his life. He offers up a way to shoulder the tremendous weight of life. Yet so many of us neglect the invitation of Jesus and we carry the burdens of life on our own. Dallas Willard, who we looked at earlier, had this to say about Jesus' words in Matthew 11. He says, in this truth lies the secret of the easy yoke. The secret involves living as Jesus lived in the entirety of his life, adopting his overall lifestyle. Our mistake is to think that following Jesus consists in loving our enemies, going the second mile, turning the other cheek, suffering patiently and hopefully, while living out the rest of our lives just as everyone else does. It's a strategy bound to fail. And it's simply put, that was a big paragraph, simply put, sum that up, if you want to experience the life of Jesus, if you want to see and experience that easy yoke, you have to adopt the lifestyle of Jesus. Or think about it like this. You know, I can be, you know, when we're able to, sitting at a cafe, looking out the window, and I can see, you know, just runners, joggers running past, running their 5, 10, 15K, whatever it is. Or, you know, I can see bodybuilders and the amazing bodies they have, and, you know, I think to myself, wow, it would be amazing to be like that. I want to be able to do that. But then I look at the lifestyle associated with the way they live. You know, while I'm there enjoying my Eggs Benedict, they're at home, you know, eating a diet that consists of, you know, celery sticks and carrot sticks and just water all the time. And, you know, when I'm staying up late to watch Netflix, they're in bed getting their full 8-9 hours of rest and up at 5:30 in the morning training and putting in the practice. You know, there's a whole lifestyle associated with the way they live. And the reality is I want their life. I want what they do, but I don't want to adopt the lifestyle behind it. And so many of us have that mentality, and we do it with Jesus. We want what he has to offer, but we don't take up the life associated with it. But we have to follow the way of Jesus. We have to follow his way of living, because he offers us such a better alternative to life. See, the reality is that within the Western church, we have lost sight of the fact that the way of Jesus is just that, a way of life. See, it's not just a set of ideas or what we call theology, or it's not just a list of do's and don'ts, what we call ethics. I mean, it is those things, and ethics and theology are so, so important, but it's also so much more than that. It's a way of life based on Jesus himself, a lifestyle. Are we orientating our lives around our rabbi, around our teacher, around Jesus? See, there's a business saying, you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your system. You don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your system. So you can set all these goals, you can set all these ideas of what you want to achieve, but unless you actually develop a system, a structure, in order to achieve those goals, you will never get there. And although this is applied to business, I think it can be applied in all areas of life. What do we want to achieve in our walk with Jesus? Set up a system and a structure so we can achieve that. You know, we have to follow the way of Jesus. We have to take his template as our own for life. We need to take on his habits and his practices, and we need to become more and more like him. And I love this quote. Frederick Dale, on his commentary on the book of Matthew, had this to say, and I love these words here. See, a yoke is a work instrument, as we saw before with the two animals. Thus, when Jesus offers a yoke, he offers what we might think tired workers need least. They need a mattress or a vacation, not a yoke. But Jesus realizes that the most restful gift he can give the tired is a new way to carry life, a fresh way to bear responsibility. Realism sees that life is a succession of burdens. We cannot get away from them. Thus, instead of offering escape, Jesus offers equipment. Jesus means that obedience to his Sermon on the Mount, or in other words, his yoke, will develop in us a balance and a way of carrying life that will give us more rest than the way we have been living. And see, when we adopt the lifestyle of Jesus, it reorientates our whole life. It's not just about a rest here or there. It's about finding rest each and every day in him. Jesus offers us equipment about how to handle the brutal reality of life. See, people all over the world, both outside and inside, are looking, inside and outside the church, are looking for an escape, a way out from under the crushing weight of life this side of Eden. But there is no escaping this life. The best the world can offer is temporary distraction or delay to the inevitable or deny the inescapable. That's why Jesus, in his words, never offers escape. He offers something far better than escape. His offer to his disciples or his apprentices is a whole new way to bear the weight of humanity with ease, at his side. Like two oxen in the field tied shoulder to shoulder with Jesus doing all the heavy lifting. at his pace, slow, unhurried, present to the moment, full of love, joy, and peace. See, the reality is with yoke and with the animals, you would often tie a strong animal with a weaker animal. Yet with the yoke, the stronger animal would be able to bear the weight of the load, and the two animals would be able to plow the field together. And see, the reality is that most of us try to be the heavy lifting animal, and then we tuck Jesus somewhere. We live life just as everyone else, and then we try to add Jesus onto our lives. But the reality is Jesus needs to do the heavy lifting in our lives, and we need to tuck under to Jesus. We need to take up his yoke. It's not about an easy life. It's about adopting the easy yoke. And see, Jesus demonstrates, and I love the way of Jesus. He demonstrates what an unhurried life looks like. See, when Lazarus was ill, and Mary and Martha came to him, Jesus, you got to come. Jesus took 4 extra days. He wasn't in a hurry. He wasn't in a rush. When Jairus came up saying, heal my daughter, please, sir, you must come. He turns and spends time with someone else, heals them, and then comes. Jesus was never in a rush. Jesus was fiercely present. He didn't allow anything to rush him to the next moment. And read the gospel accounts. Most of Jesus' life is an interruption. He's constantly interrupted by people, by disciples, by children, by everyone. Yet Jesus never comes across as agitated or annoyed. Jesus made sure to inject a healthy dose of margin into his life. His schedule was full, but he always made time for what was important. Jesus made time to slow down, to stop, to get quiet time. He made time for silence and solitude. He made time for prayer, to spend time connecting with his Father. Just take a quick look through the Gospels. Look at these 4 verses that I found. In Mark, we find this. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Mark 6:31, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Mark 6:46, after leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Luke 5:16, but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Read through the Gospel of Luke, and you'll find as the Gospel goes on, as that account goes on, the more and more busy Jesus got, the more and more time he took to actually get quiet, to get away from the crowds, to get quiet time. Yet the opposite is true for us. As we get more busy, as we get more frantic, as we get more and more responsibilities, probably the first thing to go is that alone time, is that quiet time with God. You know, more than once we read that Jesus took a nap and the disciples had to wake him. Jesus demonstrates a rested life. See, who doesn't want to be like Jesus, taking naps left, right, and center? You know, Jesus made space for nice long meals with friends, with strangers, with the company of other people. He created space for in-depth conversations about the highs and lows of life. See, he put on display an unhurried life where space for God and love for people were the top priorities. And because he said yes to his Father and his kingdom, he constantly said no to countless other invitations offered up to him. We need to orientate our life around Jesus. We need to put into play his practices and his way of living. We need to set up practices and ways to orientate our lives around the teachings and the life of Jesus. Or we need to develop a rule for life or a set of practices that help us live out the way of Jesus here and now. And so these next couple of weeks, I just want to take some time to look at some of the practices, to look at some of the ways of Jesus, to see what we can learn from our rabbi and what we can put into play in our lives to help us live a more fulfilling and less distracted and busy life. When you read through the Gospels, there's more, but 7 core practices of Jesus that I can see. Silence and solitude, as we saw in those verses. Prayer, fasting, scripture reading, Sabbath, simple living, life in community. These were the essentials of Jesus' life. And I think we need to learn, we need to observe, we need to sit at the feet of our rabbi and learn what he has to teach us about this way of life. And for me, I'm often distracted. I'm often have the white noise playing. I need to have something on. I can't be silent. I can't be alone. But as I read, you know, Jesus, as I read through the Gospels, as I read digital minimalism, and as I saw my phone usage, I said, you know what? No, I need to take some time to be silent and to be quiet. And so I've made it a practice recently to get some silence and solitude in my life. And so when I went for a walk in the morning, I'd always have my podcast ready to go, music playing or an audible. I always had something going on. But recently you said, you know what? I'm going to take, usually I'd go for a 40-minute to an hour walk in the morning. You know what? I'm going to take that time to connect with God. And so I'd leave my phone at home. I'd leave my headphones there. I'd leave my Apple Watch even there. I didn't want any distraction. And so I'd walk for an hour. And at first it was super awkward and weird to do this. But as it went on, it's become more and more comfortable. And I enjoy this time away from technology. I enjoy this time away from all the distractions. And I found myself just doing prayer walks, hearing the sounds of nature, of the birds, of just seeing the beauty around me, of being present to what's going on. And it's been good for my relationship with God. It's been good for my overall health. I find myself less distracted, less busy, and I can orientate what's important in the day. So let's find practices. Let's see how we can model our life after Jesus. See, our goal is, remember, to be with him, to be like him, and to do what he did. But we need to orientate our life around him. Following Jesus is something you do. At their core, these practices, or you might know them as spiritual disciplines, of Jesus are about a relationship. It's about developing and deepening that relationship with the Father. We get what we put in. And see, these practices, these disciplines, they're meant to be enjoyed, not endured. But it takes time, and it does take, that's why they're called practices. See, what works for me might not work for you. We're all wired differently. So let's spend some time reflecting. Let's spend some time in scripture and learning from our rabbi. If you want to know more about disciplines or some of the practices, hey, send me a message, give me a call. I'd love to have a conversation about it. I can recommend some resources to you. But these next few weeks, we're just going to be spending some time in the Gospels learning from our rabbi. And so I want to encourage you this week, take some time. Take some time away from the distraction, from the busyness, from the noise-polluted world we live in, and spend some time connecting with God. So I want to thank you so much for watching. Let me just say a prayer for you. Dear Jesus, we just want to thank you so much for this day. We want to thank you that we're able to connect with you, with each other, although it be online. We just thank you for that ability. We thank you for our media team and the effort they put in. I just want to pray for each and every person watching, each and every member of this church, that we can spend some time orientating our life around yours, that we can take up the easy yoke that you offer and live a better life. May we be counter-cultural Christians. May we not be consumed with the busyness and the rush of life, but may we take up that easy yoke that you promise. May we find salvation and healing in you. And so as we go on these journey the next few weeks, guide us, I pray. I pray that we have an amazing week and that we're able to come out of this lockdown soon. Guide each and every one of us. We leave it in your hands, Jesus. And everyone in their home said, amen. All right, we're just going to sing another song, but I hope you enjoyed this. If you want to know more, just send me a message. And I'm praying for you constantly. Take care, church.